Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Thursday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. We are with you till 10 a.m. this morning. And by we, I mean myself and Seth Payne. Seth, good morning. It's a glorious day. How are you?
Is it a glorious
day? It's a glorious day. James Harden's the hell out of here. Get out of here, you quitter. Yes.
People are jumping off of this sinking ship. We are literally sinking here in Houston. It's called subsidence. Some neighborhoods like Braeswood have actually sunk in. I think it's like 2 to 6 inches in the last couple
shiny
decades.
Way to start the day. If you live in Braeswood, just know that the apocalypse is upon you and your neighborhood is sinking.
They know
it. Good morning.
Once, one or two times a year it rains, and they're like, oh.
They know. Yeah, they know. They know. So yesterday as we were signing off in the final segment, I just posed just a impromptu question to you in light of everything that's gone on over the last several days and weeks, months really. I said, okay, who's gone first, James Harden or Jack Easterby? And I think we both said it'll probably be Harden. You know, the Texans seem to be pretty dug in on this Easterby thing. We're going to talk plenty about that today. We got our answer a lot quicker than I thought we would. Boy, James Harden pushing the issue with not wanting to be here. And Boogie Cousins went in on him. I mean, we've gotten a real window into how things have felt behind the scenes, and we'll get into all that. But James Harden traded. Looks like Raphael Stone had the Sixers and the Nets both on the hook, kind of bidding against each other. And at the end of the day, the Rockets come away with a package that included 3 players, 4 first-round picks unprotected, one of which is the Milwaukee pick coming up in the 2022 draft. 3 Brooklyn picks, 22, 24, and 2026. Milwaukee's first-round pick in 2022. 4 pick swaps with the Nets, which probably won't mean anything in the next few years. It means you have the right to flip-flop with the Nets. But in down the road in 25 and 27, when Kevin Durant and James Harden are on a beach somewhere, those could end up being lottery picks. We'll see. And then they flip one of the 3 players, Caris LeVert, over to Indiana for Victor Oladipo, who was all NBA a couple of years ago, but who's coming off of a major leg injury, but has looked good this year. The main thing with him is he's an expiring contract after this year. So at the end of the day, Seth, James Harden doesn't really get traded for a long-term young NBA superstar like they had hoped, but the Rockets have essentially replenished their draft equity for the next decade.
Right, and one thing that I keep seeing from some people just in comments and on social media and what have you is they keep referring to these picks as low first-round picks just because they're Brooklyn's picks. I would remind you that it was not long ago at all that whenever people were talking about the Rockets trading away first-round picks, it was like, well, who cares?
Right.
Who cares? As long as you got James Harden, those are always, you know, the bottom third of the first round. No, it's ridiculous. These first-round picks are worth nothing. So when you talk about Brooklyn with Kevin Durant coming off an Achilles, James Harden, not old, probably going to be productive for a long time, but Kyrie Irving being Kyrie Irving, I don't know what those picks will be. This year's or 2022 likely going to be a low pick, but beyond that, they could be really good. And the other point, Sean, because this is just so much of the trend of guys getting traded, whether the team really wants them or not, it's if you reach a certain status in the NBA, and now it's looking more and more like this in football, once you reach a certain status, you have permanent free agency, right? Like, it's almost, all it took for James Harden was to say he wanted to get traded, show up kind of fat, and then make his teammates miserable, and boom, he's out of here.
Why do you think that is, Seth? You've pointed this out many, many times. Do you think that this is part and parcel to the new ethos of a locker room and of a, more so of a front office, where teams just don't have nearly the threshold for drama behind the scenes that they used to, that there is some sort of new wave thing that goes on where they're like, whoo, no, if we have turmoil and people don't like each other, we got to get that out of the locker room. We need to have we need to remove that sort of vibe from our locker room. Why do you think that is? As a former player, why do you think that is?
I think at least part of it is social media. And I'm not sitting here, you know, being a boomer and yelling
kids
about the evils
days.
Of social media. Yeah. It's the way it is now, where any kind of discontent and any kind of drama just gets amplified so right. much. So think about Barkley and Drexler back in the day when they weren't getting along. You know, like how long would that have actually bubbled beneath the surface before it became publicly known now versus then? It might have been over extremely quickly, right?
Yes.
So I don't know. I think that's a big part of it. It's just so much easier for guys to show that they're miserable, and then the teammates all know about it. Because it wasn't always common knowledge who was angry and miserable on a team, other than if they were really flipping out in the locker room or something, then you knew it. But you'd kind of hear about drama, or like, I hear this guy's pissed off. Mm-hmm. But on a football team, everything's so big. I don't think it's never a mystery anymore. I think guys know it.
Okay, so a couple interesting things with this trade, and we're going to dig into this thing deep today on the show for sure, and we're going to hit plenty on the Texans and the head coaching search as well. But you just touched on something there. I think it's interesting. What made me think of this is when you brought up Barkley and Drexler. The Rockets did something like this back in the day when they brought in Charles Barkley. Two stars was not good enough to reclaim their spot as the two-time champion again. So they flipped Robert Horry, Sam Cassell, a couple other players to Phoenix for Charles Barkley. And they brought Charles Barkley in, and they made themselves a big three back in the day. This big three thing's been going on for a little while now. I know a lot of people like to think it's this new wave phenomenon. How they assembled these big threes maybe differed than it does today, where more guys seem to get together like it's a playground as opposed to organic deals getting made. But anyways, back in the day, those big three got put together, Olajuwon, Drexler, and Barkley. And as you pointed out, ultimately there were personality clashes and personality differences. How do you think this thing is going to go in Brooklyn with James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving? Seth, this might be the most emo big three ever assembled.
Paul Gallant honestly might have had one of the best tweets ever. And look, I'll warn you in advance, it includes body shaming. what's Gallant? Dang it, Paul Gallant.
At Gallant says.
Gallant says. Anyway, I'll say it off of memory. Oh, here we go. To remind everybody, Kyrie Irving is a flat earther.
Yeah.
No offense to any of you idiots out there who think that the earth is flat, but
idiots,
Kyrie Irving is one of you.
Right.
No offense, yep. Idiots.
Yeah.
Paul Gallant said, is Kyrie going to tell Harden his stomach is flat too?
That's pretty good. It would be inaccurate. Much the same way that
Kyrie don't care.
Yeah. That's really funny. I am really anxious to watch this ticking time bomb up in Brooklyn, these three up there. Really intrigued by this, these three personalities.
Well, yeah, Kyrie didn't want to play with LeBron James.
Right.
Okay. Right. He didn't like being second fiddle to LeBron James. So I don't know. I mean, he could end up being the... Would Kyrie be the Chris Bosh in this scenario? I think he is. Is he not?
Oh,
how's he going to feel about being a Chris Bosh?
He's undoubtedly, wide margin, the third best player of those three.
He's the Chris Bosh. And Bosh was unbelievably good at just accepting that role, right?
Yeah.
Bosh was the guy in Toronto.
Right.
And then all of a sudden he had to play third fiddle to two other guys. And that was one of Bosch's biggest values in Miami, was that there was no drama about all that. It's hard for a guy that's the guy. But Bosch kind of had that. Bosch is a more cerebral. See, now Bosch was actually, was he an engineer or a computer science major or something?
I don't know.
Very mathematically
smart
intelligent.
Guy, though, yeah.
Yeah. Not a flat earther. Like the exact opposite of a flat earther. And I think Chris Bosch is maybe his outlook on life and his wherewithal, his intellectual wherewithal, helped him in that situation, where I don't think Kyrie has that kind of perspective.
Bottom line this thing for me, how do you feel about the trade? When you saw the trade, first glance, did you feel good about it? Did you feel good Harden's finally gone? What was your gut feeling on it?
I felt like I don't like anything about this situation. I wish they could have figured out a way to work it out. I've always been ambivalent about Harden, you know, whether I'm sick of him or love him. So they didn't get fleeced. You know, it was something that had to happen. I think it's a pretty fair return. I think some of the more negative grades I've seen on the Astros side are more about how bad the situation overall is. But Harden, I mean, we see now this was an inevitability. Harden had to get traded.
The one thing that does intrigue me, this is not a title contender. I mean, the Rockets are going to struggle to make the postseason. I am anxious to see if Harden being gone now results in this team maybe overachieving what people think they're capable of. If they can get a seventh seed or something like that. Because these guys are pissed at Harden. I mean, we'll get to Boogie Cousins later. Boogie Cousins basically said, man, the disrespect started with this guy long before he said that we suck the other night. You know what I mean?
So. Am I crazy? Because I keep seeing stunning trade, unbelievable trade, all this stuff. I guess I wasn't that stunned by this. We knew there was a really good chance. I was being unrealistic and hoping that it was ever going to work out.
Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't describe it as stunning. Right. We've known that this is coming, and especially after what Harden did the other night, that obviously accelerated things. They were ready to leave him home from this road trip until they made a move. All right. When Deshaun Watson next speaks publicly, where will it be? Because that will tell the whole story. We'll talk about it next. All right, quick search update. Nothing really new with the Houston Texans. I guess the only thing affecting the Texans going on right now would be Arthur Smith, who I don't know that the Texans have put in a formal request. We had seen news that they want to talk to Arthur Smith. Arthur Smith's getting a ton of buzz right now, the OC in Tennessee. He's got a full schedule over the next several days with interviews. So that's number one. I would say the only other real news on the head coaching front is that Jerod Mayo, who is a name that maybe Texan fans should familiarize themselves with because he's a linebackers coach in New England and a former Patriot player from when Jack Easterby was in New England. I know. I'm just the messenger. He's a young coach who's getting a lot of buzz right now. He's actually got an interview scheduled with the Philadelphia Eagles. So,
Sean, a lot of people say don't kill the messenger, and they'll think they're making some logical point or something.
Yeah.
You don't kill the messenger because of logic. You kill the messenger because it feels good, because you need to lash out.
Okay.
So why not a lowly messenger? Okay. Just let me feel like I'm doing something. I will assassinate this messenger.
As the messenger, that makes me feel no safer. If anything, I feel more in danger.
What's interesting about Arthur Smith is, so Arthur Smith is the Tennessee Titans offensive coordinator. They were the third-ranked offense this year in terms of yardage. And the Buffalo Bills have a guy that's a potential coaching candidate in Brian Daboll. They're in the number two total offense in terms of yardage. I think the difference there is that Brian Daboll has a very good quarterback in Josh Allen. He helped develop that quarterback, don't get me wrong. Whereas with Arthur Smith, I think Arthur Smith is getting more out of Ryan Tannehill than his natural ability would typically give him.
Yeah.
I think that Dabble's done a great job with Josh Allen, but I think Josh Allen could do a great job with a lot of coordinators. Arthur Smith, it feels like, man, he constructed a system that uses play action extremely well. Now, they've got an absolute WWE wrestler-looking running back that scares the living daylights out of people that helps with that play action. But still, I think the scheme helps Tannehill more than the scheme helps Josh Allen.
The two openings where Arthur Smith is going to be a very easy sell to the fan base, I think, will be the Jets and the Eagles, if indeed those two teams are trying to rehabilitate the quarterbacks that they've used high draft picks on. You know, Arthur Smith, if they're stuck with Carson Wentz in Philly, and if they're of mind to try to rehabilitate Sam Darnold's career in New York, then Arthur Smith can take this Ryan Tannehill thing that he put together and say, look what I did for Ryan Tannehill. I might be able to help you get something out of both of these guys. Seth and I had a chance to sit down yesterday with Dabo Swinney. The Bear Bryant Awards were last night. Nick Saban won the Bear Bryant Award, by the way. Dabo Swinney, one of the finalists. He's a three-time winner of the Bear Bryant Award. And obviously, Deshaun Watson was a big topic with Dabo and Seth and myself. Here is Dabo Swinney on Deshaun Watson.
I don't know the ins and outs. I really don't. And I haven't heard Deshaun speak. You know, Deshaun will speak for himself when it's time for him to speak. And there's a lot of things that people hear and a lot of things that get put out or whatever. And, but Deshaun is incredibly, loyal, incredibly committed, incredibly smart, incredibly passionate about winning. But he'll speak when he needs to speak.
I was really anxious to talk to Dabo yesterday, Seth, and the one word he said there that made me feel better about the situation with Deshaun Watson was loyal. I think, and not that Deshaun Watson owes anybody anything necessarily if he feels he's been disrespected or wronged. Those are his emotions. I'm not going to tell him how to feel about this whole thing. But, I really truly feel like Deshaun Watson wants this thing to work out with the Houston Texans. Like, Deshaun Watson's not in James Harden mode at this point, in my mind.
Yeah. And, you know, from talking to people close to Deshaun Watson, it seems like it's not a one-ticket item. What is it when you're voting based on just one item? Is it a one-item voter? I don't know. It's not one single thing. It's not just Jack Easterby. It's not just miscommunication with Cal McNair. It's a bunch of things kind of rolled up into the entire package. And the conversations with Nick Caserio, perhaps with Cal McNair, I don't know if there will be conversations with Jack Easterby, but I get the sense that it's more than, hey, fire Jack Easterby and everything's fine, or hire this coach and everything's fine. I think Deshaun wants to be made comfortable that this organization genuinely has what it takes to put together a championship team and not just get the best out of Deshaun Watson, put together a championship team. And maybe, I don't know. I have zero idea how committed Deshaun would be to, like, saying, all right, if this doesn't happen, then I'm out of here. Or if this is a whole lot of saber rattling. You know, him kind of just warning the Texans, hey, enough is enough. I'm going into my fifth season now. Let's get this thing together and, you know, show me what you got. I hope that's what it is. Yeah. And I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that that's what it is. Because so far, all we've heard about him potentially even requesting a trade is that he might have raised the possibility with his friends.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it.
You know, which is not, look, that's, hey, that's just having a conversation. Yeah, that's just, you know, when you throw something out there to see what the reaction is.
Yeah. Well, the last time we heard from Deshaun Watson was 10 days ago, and this is what he had to say.
I mean, we just need a whole culture shift. We just need new energy. We need discipline. We need structure. We need a follower or a leader. So we can follow that leader as players. And that's what we need. And, you know, we got to have, you know, the love of just not just the game of football, because that's what we do, but the love for people and the people in this organization. We all got to be on the same page. There's too many different minds and too many different ideas and too many people thinking that they have this power, and it's not like that. You know, we need someone that stand tall, and this is who we follow, and this is the way it goes. Like I said yesterday after the game, and we're going to do it this way to win.
So, I mean, that cut becomes more and more clear after what's gone on the last 10 days over there. That's the last time we heard him speak. When we hear Deshaun speak, Dabo Swinney just alluded to it, eventually Deshaun's going to speak for himself. In my mind, what outlet Deshaun uses to do that is going to say a lot about where he is with the team. If the next time we hear from Deshaun is on some sort of team platform, or maybe the next time we hear from him might be a press conference going into OTAs. We don't know. We have no idea when Deshaun's going to speak on all this. if he sits down and does some sort of interview with Josina Anderson or Tom Rinaldi or somebody like that on a national outlet, it's bad. That's bad.
Vanessa Hudgens as opposed to Vanessa Richardson.
Now, that would be fun. He's on E with Vanessa Hudgens. That would be cool. Talking about
what if it's completely out of left field like that? Dude, you know the word that caught my ear when he talked about that last week, what, 10 days ago now?
Yeah.
You said?
Last Monday.
The one word was love. And you might think, okay, whatever, you're making too much of that, Seth. Maybe I am, but yesterday, Sean, we got to talk to Tom Allen, the coach from Indiana, that was a finalist for the Bear Bryant Awards.
And Seth verbally committed to him, even though he doesn't have any eligibility left.
I was ready to run through Cal's brick wall after after we talked to Tom Allen. I swear I was.
Boy, real tough considering it's got like three bricks right now.
And you look at Tom Allen, and he looks like he's straight out of 1955, right? He's got like black glasses, he's got, you know, half bald, and he just looks like an old school football coach. And he's got an acronym. You know how much we love acronyms around here. DTS, stands for dependable, tough, smart. So Sean and I have fun with them sometimes. Right. Tom Allen's acronym, this tough guy football coach whose players like kept interrupting one of his interviews after they beat Wisconsin to tell the camera that he was the best coach in America. Everybody come to Indiana University. All this guy. His acronym is LEO, L-E-O. And all that means is love each other. So it's all like, it's a very different vibe and feel that you might get out of, say, Bill Belichick or Bill O'Brien, like, or especially Matt Patricia. So I don't think Deshaun uses that word love just as casually or because he wants to, you know, come off like one of these wannabe hippies that I went to high school with that claimed they were Grateful Dead fans, even though they couldn't name three Dead songs.
Right.
Deshaun's not that guy. Deshaun doesn't have like a dancing bear tattoo without knowing any Grateful Dead songs. Deshaun, I think, wants a different atmosphere, kind of like what he had at Clemson.
Yes.
And to where you actually enjoy playing football, where you enjoy coming to work, and where you win that way. You know, there are a bunch of different ways to do it. And it's hard to compare NFL teams to the Patriots because it makes it look like every way is inferior. But I think Deshaun's just got a different vision than the Patriots' way. So when they hired Nick Caserio, man, that sure felt a whole lot like love was going to be kicked out of the equation.
That's a great, great point. That's a really good point. Until we hear from Deshaun Watson directly, this is my biggest fear of the offseason. We'll tell you what it is next. All right, quick coaching update for the Houston Texans and their search for the next head coach. I first saw it on my timeline from Patrick Storm. It looks like Tom Pelissero, the NFL Network, was, by my timeline here, maybe the first to report this. The Texans have requested an interview with Rams defensive coordinator Brandon Staley. And I think what Texan fans should know about Brandon Staley, I read a pretty lengthy article about him this week about him convincing Sean McVay that he was the right guy for that DC job in L.A., a lot of schematic stuff in the article that I came away really impressed with Staley. I came away impressed with him. There was a video interview with him as well. I think he does have some of that, some of that sort of young guy charisma that maybe the team's talking about, you know, the extrovert type stuff. I think when you get a job, Seth, as a defensive coordinator, especially with a resume like his, it's not a lengthy resume. He coached with Vic Fangio in Chicago. He was part of Vic Fangio's staff. And then the ties maybe to Nick Caserio would be that Brandon Staley spent some time as the defensive coordinator at John Carroll University, which is the alma mater of Nick Caserio. So that could be some connection right there with him. But Staley's a young guy. He's in his late 30s. This Rams defense has been really, really good this year. They've got some good talent on there, but it's been a good defense. And I would assume, Seth, that Brandon Staley would probably bring somebody on the offensive side of the ball that mirrors a lot of what Sean McVay likes to do in L.A. I think that's probably a fairly safe assumption that if he's going to outsource the offensive side of the ball, his small window where he's been in the NFL, that's what he's been exposed to so far.
I think so, and especially since, look, guys, once you coach on a team like that has a Kubiak/Shanahan/McVay style of offense, you see the superiority of it in a lot of ways. And it's I say superiority. There's nothing that helps you, regardless of what system you run, if you have an awesome quarterback, that's A number one. But in terms of bringing in a system that is paint by numbers in a lot of respects, you know, and then you can tweak it and put your own flair to it and your own genius to it. But it's a little bit cookie cutter. If you run it the right way, you're going to have success with it. So I think that he might do that. And that would benefit Deshaun Watson a lot. Now, schematically with Brandon Staley, he does a lot of the stuff that Vic Fangio has been doing for a while now. Without getting too complicated, to play with a lot of too high safeties,
yep,
and limit big plays. And then if you have studs up front, then you can do some really good stuff if everybody's executing the scheme really well. I think they use a certain amount of deception that's very effective. It's hard to separate the coordinator from the defense when you're looking at the Rams, because they do have some studs. They've got this guy. I don't know if you've heard of him, Sean. His name's Aaron Donald. He's quite good.
I've heard he's good at football.
If you think about the defensive backs, if you've got them playing very conservatively and very carefully trying to limit the big plays, that means you're going to be susceptible to the run up front unless you got some studs gunking things up. So right now the Texans don't have those guys. I think if Brandon Staley were hired here, I think perhaps he could make the defense better. I think you're at least a couple seasons away from it being a genuinely really good defense. I don't think you're going to get the Rams defense right away, especially because the Texans don't really have a lot of capital to trade or actually sign free agents. But it will get better over a couple years.
Let me ask you this, because this is probably a question that Texan fans have when you do that, you know, when you go into the next layer down on Brandon Staley's defense. And we're going to get to Deshaun Watson and my biggest fear with him in just a second. But if you're just tuning in, the Texans have requested an interview with Brandon Staley, the defensive coordinator for the Rams. We should point out, Rams still alive in the postseason, so that's going to impact things. They travel to Green Bay this weekend. I think they're going to lose, but we'll see what happens. My question for you, Seth, is the way you describe Staley's defense there, do you feel like if they hired Brandon Staley, it would increase, decrease, or have no effect on the chances of J.J. Watt being here next year?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think it would increase. I think if you hire a defensive-minded coach especially, it's going to increase the chances, because he's going to look at that defense and say, all right, like I told you, Sean, you look at the second half of the Titans game. The game plan for the Titans was to run away from J.J. Watt every single play. Every single time they called a running back run, other than I think there were two snaps, which ended up going for not that much yardage, where they ran at J.J. Watt. Everything else, they were just running away from J.J. And I think no matter what kind of a scheme you run, with the talent that the Texans have or don't have at the cornerback position right now, it's really scary to further deplete the defensive line.
Yeah.
So I think that now that means that the defensive coach might really want to keep JJ, but then JJ's got a whole lot of other things that, you know, there's going to be a salary component. There's going to be whatever issues JJ, like Deshaun has been public about the culture. We don't know if JJ shares those same thoughts or what have you. So there are a lot of moving parts there. I'm still somewhat pessimistic that JJ is going to be back, but I think a defensive-minded coach, in theory, would make it more likely.
Well,
and as a Texans fan, you might be saying, all right, well, do I really, really want JJ back? Personally, I think that there's part of kind of the leadership and the soul of this team right now,
yeah,
would really benefit from having JJ there.
Yeah.
It's and not just on an X's and O's standpoint, but yeah, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, well, especially a defensive coach, Seth, whose scheme, as you just pointed out, is predicated on having talent in the front seven. The last thing you want to do probably if you're the Texans and if they hire Brandon Staley is trade easily your best player in your front seven.
Yeah. You know what'd be interesting is if you think about like Vic Fangio back when he was with the 49ers, one of the things that really made that defense go was having a couple of stud linebackers. They had Willis and what's his name?
Navarro Bowman. Yeah.
But because then you can play those safeties really deep, because you got two rangy guys that can run all over the place in coverage. Cunningham isn't that guy in coverage right now. Maybe Brandon Staley gets Cunningham like gets that absolute max. Cunningham's done some very good things in his young career. He's got another level he can ascend to, and maybe Staley gets him there.
That would be part of my pitch if I were Staley and I wanted this job is, look, you're paying this guy like he's the third best inside linebacker in football. You know who's going to get the most out of him? Me. We talked to Dabo Swinney yesterday. One of the first things that Seth and I asked him was, hey, any advice with this Trevor Lawrence character coming into the AFC South on how we can slow this guy down?
Any sort of advice you'd give us in having to deal with Trevor Lawrence being on the other side of the football for the next 10 or 12 years?
Weaknesses, least favorite routes, all this stuff.
Yeah, make sure Deshaun Watson's in Houston.
I would say that's really good advice from Dabo Swinney right there. Make sure that you've got the quarterback who can go toe-to-toe with him. More from Dabo on the relationship between Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans.
The biggest thing is he's the franchise. And he's such a great human being to go along with being a great quarterback. So, I would think that they will figure out who's going to be the coach. And certainly I would think he would be involved in that, or at least communicated with. And because that relationship is – there's nothing more important than that. I mean, to me, the owner, the quarterback, the head coach, that alignment is critical. And so they'll get it right. I'm sure there's a lot of smart people involved and they'll all figure it out and come together and get some type of resolution to it and move forward.
And Cal McNair has acknowledged the alignment frequently in the last week or so. Like my biggest fear is two things, Seth. One, Deshaun is not part of that alignment right now. I'm fearful of that, obviously. And I think it's fair to say that he is not in alignment right now. There's some convincing that needs to go on with Deshaun Watson. My other biggest fear with all this is that until Deshaun speaks, then the outside world is going to be posing trade scenarios as if they're plausible. And they may very well be. And we don't know anything about Nick Caserio really at this point, other than his pedigree and what we saw in one press conference. My biggest fear is that these other teams are going to act like the store is open right now for Deshaun Watson, and they're going to be making phone calls. And if Nick Caserio is a good general manager, he picks up the phone. Now, I think if he's a good general manager, he summarily hangs up after they start making trade offers to him. But my biggest fear with the unknown of what Nick Caserio is all about, and honestly, if I'm just assuming he's got some New England in him, then I'm really fearful of this happening, is that some team's going to blow him away with an offer and he's going to trade Deshaun Watson. That's my biggest fear right now, is that Nick Caserio is going to look at this situation, look at the roster, and go, boy, this really is a rebuild. I know we've got Deshaun, but this thing is going to take a couple years, even with a great quarterback, to turn around. This cap space thing is a mess right now. Deshaun's salary is only going through the roof the next couple years, and he's going to look around and go, you know what? I've got a 6-year contract. This thing's a rebuild even with Deshaun. This team's offering me 4 first-round picks, one of which I can use on a quarterback. Let's just reset this thing. And be able to put his stamp on the team and make it his rebuild. That's my biggest fear with all this right now.
This is, and you know what my biggest fear is that quote from the Ian O'Connor book about Bill Belichick,
yes,
that I brought up yesterday, that said, cited a Patriots assistant who said that, you know, there are a lot of coaches in New England that think that they could have done all of what they did with any top 15 quarterback. That there's this sense that, you know, it's really more about the system and the scheme and all of that. And I don't know, like, how many coaches up there actually feel that way? Is there a perception up there? I do know that I know that at times, and this happens in any organization that has a great quarterback, people start to feel like, you know what? We should be getting more credit for the work we do. I'm tired of Tom or Aaron Rodgers or anybody else. Because Andrew Brandt, who used to be the GM for the Packers, I've heard him talk about this, where there's times where you start to feel like, oh, yeah, hey, Brett Favre is great, and so is Aaron Rodgers. But, you know, we're doing a lot of other good stuff back here, too.
Right.
You know? So there's this natural tendency to feel that way. And I would love to get a straight answer from Caserio about this. He would never give it, and nor should he. But I would love to find out, like, how he really feels Tom Brady's – like, what percentage Tom Brady was responsible for the success in New England.
Yeah.
Because if there's any part of him that thinks that they could have done it with a top 15 quarterback, he's wrong, 100% wrong. So I have to hope that he's not one of those unnamed assistants or personnel people that the unnamed source in Ian O'Connor's book was talking about.
Yeah, I'll say this. The thing that makes me feel a little bit better about my biggest fear is that Nick Caserio did say enough things in that press conference last week to make me feel like he's not just going to be somebody who's brain is in lockstep with the Belichick way of thinking, including, yeah. He even said outright, Deshaun Watson is our quarterback.
Yeah, he's our quarterback. And again, you know, once we have an opportunity to spend some time together, we'll further discussions. But can't tell you how much respect and admiration that I have for him, for who he is as a player and what he means to this franchise.
You know what, though? That right there, and I'm not accusing him of trying to mislead or anything here. I think that's the statement that any good GM should give, yeah. Because really, like any player is tradable at any given time, depending on what the offer is. Yeah, like there's one sucker out there that might give you up. So he used the present tense.
Yeah.
Like, and that's just standard. That's general managership 101. Mm-hmm. If you say he will be our quarterback for the next 5 years, then all of a sudden you've painted yourself into a corner. All he said was, hey, Deshaun Watson is our quarterback, and he's an awesome quarterback, by the way. I'm speaking in the present tense.
The only hypothetical in my mind, Seth, when it comes to a Deshaun Watson trade, the only place I've allowed my brain to go to where I would even be remotely accepting of something like that would be if the Jags got on the phone and said, hey, we're going to give you the number one overall pick and all this other stuff for Deshaun Watson. I would hate to have to see Deshaun Watson twice a year in Jacksonville, but to me, that's the only thing that the Texans could get in return that would give reasonable hope to the fan base, is that you're resetting with the number one overall pick, a guy who's viewed coming out of college even better than Deshaun was viewed coming out of college. I mean, Deshaun dropped to 12th in the draft. Trevor Lawrence is viewed as the next Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning type of prospect. You get a lot of draft equity to go with it. You get him on his rookie contract, so you're fixing a lot of things at the same time with all that. To be clear, I don't want to do that, but it's the only scenario in my mind where I've looked at and I go, this is one that I think I might be able to talk myself into. Any other scenario that I've seen, any other team that I've seen, 4 first-round picks, 5, get the hell out of here. Because the problem with that, Seth, is that the only year the first-round pick is probably going to be any good from that team is in the 2021 draft, you know, because it's presumably the next 5 years that team's going to be a contender because Deshaun Watson is their quarterback.
I haven't gotten a good feel for this. I might spend some time after the show today trying to figure out how the average Jacksonville Jaguars fan would feel about that trade, because the Jaguars have the most cap space in the league. So they could absorb half of Deshaun Watson's contract this year if they wanted to.
They could take Whitney Merciless and Eric Murray off of our hands too, yeah. Probably. You know what I mean? Like a salary dump.
Oh.
Right?
Oh. Boy, you just blew my mind.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. And then the Texans would end up with Trevor Lawrence. Now, this is the dangerous thing. I don't want to start going down that road and thinking about that.
Yeah.
It's like when you're just bored on a Sunday and you go through some open houses with your wife, and all of a sudden you go through a house that doesn't make sense for you, but man,
yes.
Did you see that swimming pool in the backyard?
With the kitchen I've always wanted. Yeah.
And you know, it doesn't fit in one bit with all the financial goals and everything that you have, but you just can't stop thinking about it, and it plants that little seed. Yeah. So I don't want to go too far down that road, but as long as there is acrimony and the longer we go with this and the closer we get to the draft, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, that might start to be something that tempts you. I would prefer to just nip it in the bud so we can get on the same page with a new coach and just move forward.
Trevor Lawrence is a home theater. It's basically what we're saying right now. He's a deluxe 150-inch screen home theater with 3 rows of seating that you absolutely can't afford and do not need.
Tell me, Sean, yeah. Put yourself in the shoes, or I guess more correctly, the sandals of a Jacksonville Jaguars fan.
Okay.
Would you prefer having Trevor Lawrence fresh, new, maybe with Urban Meyer if he ever gets around to making up his mind? Or would you rather have Deshaun Watson with, I guess, maybe Urban Meyer?
In a vacuum,
if you're a Jaguars
okay,
fan.
Yeah, in a vacuum. Well, I'm glad you brought up Urban Meyer, you know, because I think in a vacuum, I'd rather have Deshaun Watson, obviously. I mean, he's one of the top 5 quarterbacks in football. You know what he is. The thought of Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence just sort of coming in at the same time, growing together, that kind of thing, is intriguing to me. So I think if I'm Jacksonville, it depends on if they hire Urban Meyer or not. But Deshaun's going to be great with Urban Meyer too. I'd rather have Deshaun Watson than Trevor Lawrence. I would rather have Deshaun Watson than Trevor Lawrence.
If I were a Jaguars fan, I might want Deshaun Watson because he could actually help Urban Meyer a little bit in the transition to the
NFL.
That's
a great point.
Like, Urban's going to have questions. You know, like, he'll be very well educated about the differences, but he's going to have questions at times. They're like, hey, Deshaun, what do you think of this?
Yeah.
And that'd be a big, big ally for Urban Meyer.
That's a really good point. Deshaun can be as big a resource for Urban Meyer as Urban Meyer is for Deshaun Watson. That's a good point. Let's drop a phone call in here. Let's go to Missouri City, talk to Brian. Brian, you're up on Payne and Pendergast. Good morning.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Thank you. You make my drive in every morning a lot easier. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thanks.
One of the things I want to warn Houston fans, and it's not, I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer here. I'm from Detroit, grew up watching the Lions, saw every game Barry Sanders ever played. And the Texans right now are going down the Lions' way instead of the Patriots' way.
Yep.
The Lions had Russ Thomas, who was the owner's, you know, kick-around guy, and the seats were always full, and nothing would ever change. That's where the Texans are going. They're not going down the Patriots' way. They're going down the Lions' way. And let me just tell you, we lost Barry Sanders because of it. We lost Calvin Johnson because of it. So those fans that don't think that J.J. Watt and Deshaun Watson will sit out or walk, let me tell you from firsthand, you know, knowledge, they'll be gone. Oh. And there's no coming back from it.
Wow. Oh, boy. That,
Brian,
boy,
it's a really good phone call.
Calvin Johnson and Barry Sanders just flat out retired. Like, yeah, they just said, walked away. Those guys, they both had really good football left in them.
Yep.
And it does. There's times where, especially once guys have enough money, they're willing to make decisions that maybe don't make the best financial sense. Deshaun obviously has a whole lot of – Deshaun's not retiring – but he is at that point where if he is as fed up with the organization on the same level as a Calvin Johnson or a Barry Sanders, he's not going to retire, but he might say, you know what? I'll take the financial hit. I'm cool with it. I'm just gonna bide my time until you get me out of here.
Yeah, yeah. It's I think about that a lot, you know, because the Texans played the Lions this year, so they were at one point in the schedule they were front and center for the Texans, and I got to thinking about that because that was when the Texans season was. It had already slid into the abyss at that point. And you watch Matthew Stafford, former first overall pick. I think he's a respected guy around the league, obviously very, very talented. And he's never won a playoff game. and some of that's on him. They've made it to the playoffs a few times. But he certainly hasn't had enough at-bats in the playoffs to a quarterback that's at his skill level. Yeah, I think that's a really good warning by Brian there. All right, as we head towards the top of the hour, we've got James Harden that we need to dig into some more, the James Harden trade. And while we're on Deshaun Watson, the most important thing the Texans need to do to satisfy Deshaun Watson as we head towards a coaching update here at the top of the hour, a new candidate on the list, on the radar for the Texans. That's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.